The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 677. It's the 6th of January 2017. On the podcast today, I have Simon Clifton, co-founder and chief technology officer of Satellite Solutions Worldwide. That's SAT. Ticker. It gives an operational update and covers the completion of the Viviol acquisition. Plus, I also have David Buick, City Legend at Pam Meagordon, talking about the outlook for 2017, Brexit, and covers some of the stocks on Pam Meagordon's conviction buy list for 2017. I also have his colleague, Chief Economist at Pam Meagordon, Simon French, talks about Trump versus Toyota, US non-farm payrolls, and financial analysts being labelled as having a Michael Fish moment. I also have today suggested one for your watch list, which is Action Hotels. Ticker there is AHCG, submitted by Value Hunter. Thank you very much. Don't forget, do your own research. Nothing on this podcast is intended as investment advice. Plus, I also have, as always, the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets platform in the last 7 days, as it's a Friday, and also the top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Simon Clifton, co-founder and chief technology officer at Satellite Solutions Worldwide. Ticker code there is SAT. Simon, thank you for joining me again.
Thank you. Good morning.
Now, you've had some good news out today, and the share price is reacting accordingly. We'll get into that in a bit, but as I always like to do, for new listeners or people not aware of your company, could you give us a summary as to what Satellite Solutions is all about, please, Simon?
Yes, so Satellite Solutions Worldwide was founded 8 years ago. Essentially, what we do is we deliver fast broadband to people who can't get it any other way. So if your ADSL or fibre doesn't reach your premises or you have a flaky service, we deliver alternative services, mainly over satellite, but also over fixed wireless. And we do that currently in 32 countries across the world.
Wow, so you are around about just below a 50 million market cap, and it seems to be going well for you. And we all know, so, you know, internet now is essential. If I haven't got internet, I worry more about that than food or drink. You know, I think it is essential, not only to personal use, to businesses as well. So we can see you are, you know, filling a necessary gap, an essential gap there. Now, you've got some news out today. It's been obviously positive, looking at the share price up by nearly 6%. So can you take us through what the news is all about, please, Simon?
Yeah, just another step really in our business plan, but it is important news. Firstly, we've announced a new capacity deal with SES, part of Astra Group, very large satellite owners over Europe, for a VNO, which is essentially a way of us delivering services where we buy capacity in large chunks. Satellite capacity is a bit of a commodity market, just like any other commodity. You know, the bigger you buy, the larger amounts you buy, the better price you get. And we're just buying a chunk of bandwidth, which will deliver some excellent services for our customers in France, Ireland, and the UK.
Okay, and so you've bought more of this at a cheaper rate, or what? It's improved commercial terms, isn't it?
Yeah, essentially we've been dealing with SES for several years now, but the way that we've been buying capacity is more what you'd expect for a smaller provider. And as the company has scaled, it enables us to go out and buy in bigger chunks and do a better deal effectively, where we take more control of the way we manage the product ourselves.
Okay, and hopefully that will filter into the bottom line there. And also the acquisition update, can you take us through that?
Yes, essentially, France, one of the biggest markets of broadband in Europe. We've already made several acquisitions, which we've announced in France, and we have a good growing business there. We have a new business center just north of Paris in Amiens, and we're gradually buying other ISPs to get scale and to, you know, to deliver bigger numbers in France. We're picking up some very good people, picking up good businesses, people who understand the way that the market works in France, and that's helping us to deliver more sales.
Okay, and their customer base there is looks quite good there. They, well, approximately, is it 1,900 residential and business customers, and also what's that, with 12,500 subscribers, is that right?
Yeah, so our customer numbers in France, yeah, touching 12,500 at the moment. So this is not a huge acquisition, but it's a meaningful one. And, you know, bearing in mind that 10 to 15% of our growth comes from referrals from our existing customers, all these things help us, you know, get greater penetration in the market.
So your business mix there, I mean, obviously UK, and so where are the other big markets at the moment for you?
In terms of our biggest market for new connections, it's actually Australia at the moment. There's a very significant government scheme operating in Australia where the government is funding satellite broadband for up to 400,000 homes, and we're connecting over 1,000 a month new customers there. But in terms of Europe, one of our biggest markets is the UK, obviously. Ireland is very important to us, but also France. France is a country, if you've ever driven across it, that's very spread out and lots of rural areas, and there's a fantastic government intervention scheme there where the government pays for the hardware and installation, and therefore customers can join us at no cost. And of course, that obviously helps sales.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure on government, isn't there, to enforce this and get, you know, make it fair for all, make it a level playing field for businesses in the country and in cities. I mean, does this, you know, will this affect your business in any way? Because as more pressure is put on the government, I mean, will they use the services of you more, or will they go on the traditional route of trying to extend fibre to the country? What's the situation there?
I think everybody's aware, really, of where the fibre rollout is going to extend to, and the government's realised that in every country, and it's a different mix in each country, but essentially there's always going to be this 5 to 10% of customers left who can't get broadband over wires or fibre, and that's what we're there for. And the governments have considerable political pressure and commitments, indeed, across Europe to meet certain speed deadlines, and the only way that they really can do that is where alternative providers like us come in and fill in this last 5 to 10%. And in each of these countries, there is a different government appetite for subsidising it. There's a very well-developed scheme in France. The UK scheme is starting to really gather pace now as they're gradually evolving it to make it more simple. And we expect other governments to follow suit over the next 2 to 3 years as the political pressure increases.
So there'll always be this, you know, demand from this last-mile customer, won't there?
Indeed. You know, the situation will not change significantly because the money that's available just simply doesn't stretch to everybody. And, the economies and the viability of laying fibre just don't stretch to all these locations.
Yeah.
And as we find, as we go forward, you know, the government estimates in terms of the number of people affected seem to be quite conservative. And, that's obviously good for the business.
Marvellous stuff. Well, every day on the podcast, Simon, I cover the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets app, website, platform there. So can you give us 3 reasons why someone who isn't following you should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things is the fact that there's this ever-increasing demand for broadband. It's vital for kids to be able to do their homework. It's vital for people to be able to work from home. And we don't have to stimulate that market. You only have to look in the papers and look around you every day to see that you need fast broadband to participate really in modern life. The business has strong, high-quality, long-term revenue streams from these customers, which mean, you know, that we're very stable moving forward. And we have a very, very clear view on where we're going in terms of our growth. We have a strong pathway for organic growth in terms of new customer sales. And also we have a strong pipeline of acquisitional growth, which will help us penetrate markets that we haven't actually moved into yet.
Marvellous. Simon, great to chat to you, and look forward to chatting to you some more when no doubt you reveal some more news in the not-too-distant future.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Buick, City legend at Panmure Gordon. David, thank you for coming back on. Happy New Year.
And to you too, Justin. Greetings to you.
Yes, first and foremost, what are your thoughts on the New Year? Do you feel bullish for 2017, David?
I'm not really as bullish as a lot of my colleagues are, and also the market is in much better shape than I thought it would be. I thought the fact that we saw such an enormous rally at the end of 2016, much of it down to what I call Trumpitis, and also to the fact that Brexit was nothing like as bad as people thought it was going to be initially, and the fact that sterling fell out of bed to the tune of 18%, which of course gave about 60% of the constituent stocks within the FTSE 100 a terrific fillip. But whether it's justifiable with the P ratio at around 16 times earnings for the FTSE 100 to crack on with the same virulence and the same enthusiasm as it did in the latter half of 2016, I have my doubts. But I think we're all waiting at the moment until January the 20th when Donald J. Trump is installed as the 45th president of the United States. And let's just see whether he does get this very exciting legislation through Congress, which of course is the cuts in corporation tax, down from 35% to hopefully 15% over a two-year period. And also the acceptance of $1 trillion worth of infrastructure spending in various projects around the cities in the United States. This will be very good for business. It could conceivably be a little bit inflationary. And hence we got some warnings a couple of days ago from the Fed minutes that Janet Yellen and her colleagues were keeping an eye on this because they felt it had inflationary tendencies. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad for business. It's just a question of inflation will have to be watched.
Yeah, okay. Aside from US now, where do you see the speed humps, you know, for the UK economy? Because we've had some good figures out of late, I think. But in 2017, where do you think would be the stumbling blocks?
I think what we've seen from both construction and from manufacturing, and yesterday, of course, from the service sector, where the figures were quite outstanding, the best for 17 months. And we do know, even those people living in London are the endorsement of this, though it is much wider spread than that, is that banking, insurance, hotels, restaurants are absolute, and tourism is absolutely booming in this country. And this, London is a very cheap place to come. But as the expression goes, one swallow doesn't make a summer.
Yeah.
And I suspect that come March, when we might have some idea of the colouring of Brexit and how it's going to pan out, and how, of course, our European friends are going to deal with us, is the $64,000 question. I'm not as negative. I mean, all I'm hearing is thoroughly unpleasant rhetoric from the likes of Juncker and Barnier, which I don't dismiss with the contempt that it doesn't deserve. I just don't like the tone of their voice. The fact remains they think they hold all the aces in the hole, and they think that the European Union is completely and utterly impregnable and will be as it is in 5 years' time. And I have news for them. This is just not going to be the case, because I think we could have problems with Holland in March of this year at their referendum. And then, of course, what the kind of atrocities that are carrying on in Berlin and that have carried on in Istanbul in the course of the last week will give the Le Pen brigade a huge encouragement. And if, by any chance, France were to fall to Le Pen, no question of any doubt about it, France will be taken out of the European Union. One thing to lose the United Kingdom, another thing altogether to lose France, and that would fragment Europe tremendously. So I'm hoping that good sense will prevail. I don't believe in hard, soft Brexit, whatever it is. I believe in sensible negotiations, and let's hope both people get the message very quickly.
Yeah, in my mind, it's almost a battle between, you know, business and politics. Now, the right thing is to do the right thing by business, isn't it? To help people facilitate business across, you know, the continent of Europe, rather than try and make politics win out in a hard-headed fashion, you know? It's almost like, see good sense, do what's right for your people, you know, facilitate business. Don't think about, this is the policy, we're sticking by it, do you think?
Well, I think what you're saying is the message you put across, and I'll put it off in children's language, is be grown up.
Yeah.
And be pragmatic. There are 500 million faces that need facing on both, feeding on both sides of the channel. They need to do business. They need to do trade. And to cut off your nose to spite your face strikes me as completely ludicrous. I don't expect any sweet deals, but what I'm finding very interesting now was that everybody was telling me, as regards to the City of London, look out, they're going in their droves over to Paris, over to Frankfurt, over to even Dublin and Amsterdam. No, they're not. They're not going to Paris for the simple reason that the tax system over there is ludicrous. They're not going over there because the banking sector in the European Union is grossly undercapitalized to the tune of about 300 billion euros. So why would they want to go in out of the frying pan into the fire? That doesn't make any sense to me at all. Also, English is the international language of the world. The center of the time zone is London. The expertise has been here for 70 years. And if you even look at Frankfurt, with great respect to the world, I have enormous respect for the Germans. It's a Mickey Mouse town. It's got 750,000 people. It would take them 10 years to build up the infrastructure. So a few hundred people or a few thousand people will go. But even JP Morgan today, I noticed, is changing its mind, saying there is no reason for us to be seeing going to Paris at this juncture. So I just think that some of the rhetoric has been very counterproductive. I think some of the behavior on both sides, not just our European friends, but also those in very senior political positions in this country are using rhetoric that is extremely unhelpful.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, I saw there on your social media there that Pamela Gordon have their conviction list out for 2017. Can you cover some of the stocks there, please, David, if you would?
Yes. As many of your listeners will know, that Pamela Gordon isn't generally a company that is known for looking after, cajoling and promoting from the big brigade. We're known for small and medium-sized enterprises, and one of our expertise where we're very, very powerful is in the area of biotech. So Dr. Julie Simmons, our biotech analyst, has put up CareTech, and her colleague, Dr. Mike Mitchell, both of them qualified doctors, have put up Hutchison China Meditech, and we both think these are growth stocks. As you probably noticed last year, the world of drugs had a very, very poor year, because I think the Hillary Clinton cumulonimbus cloud of, how can I put it, dislike for the drug sector hung over the market, and I'm hoping this might get cleared up fairly soon. Then, of course, we're looking at other areas where we are comfortable, is the maintenance building products manufacturer, one not particularly well known, called Epwin Group. Adrian Kearsey there is very keen that gets flagged up. It's one that he really likes. Kieran Hodgson, who's won prizes this year for being one of the better commodity analysts, sticks by his guns and believes that Gem Diamonds is going to have a tremendous year as well, which is great. And also from the sector really that has gone down in terms of what I call people having a real interest in it, which is the utility sector. Our colleague Jonathan Halliwell has flagged up Informa. This is against the backdrop of a highly uncertain global macroeconomic outlook, but we stick to the stock that we believe can generate solid economic returns with defensive self-help characteristics on an undemanding valuation. We believe that $1.2 billion acquisition of Penton strengthens the platform from which Informa can deliver a 5-10% earnings per share. And this is a company we really like. Moving on, going to the big sector again, this is a company that is valued, has gone up 51%, a big firm, is Royal Dutch Shell. And Colin Smith, our very respected oil analyst, believes that this has got a tremendous, now that they've bedded down BG Group, now that the oil price has gone up by about 97% in the course of the last year, from $30 to $57, very roughly, we believe that Royal Dutch Shell is a company that not only pays an outstanding dividend, but it's got a real chance of delivering in terms of the expertise, both of gas and oil, and that BG Group, having cost an arm and a leg, will finally pay its way. Now, I'd like to move on now to one which is St. James's Place, which is basically, this is celebrating its 25th year. It was partly owned by Lloyds Bank. In those years, 25, St. James's Place has grown from a 500 million capital company to a FTSE 100 participant. The transformation is given by a long-serving and highly regarded management team. We review the trading outlook as exceptionally good and certainly in line with the company guidance, 15 to 20% growth in the medium long term. And we're increasing our price target from 1270 up to 1274 from 1145. You know, in terms of fund management and insurance levels, this company has really delivered.
Marvellous, David. Well, listen, there's a few there of all different sizes. And do you know what? I honestly believe it at the moment, for the next at least 5 years, I think, because of I mentioned it lots of times, because of the pullback in, you know, investment from, I think, it's, I don't know what the number is, people saying it's over $1 trillion now by big oil and gas companies. They've pulled out, you know, future investment, that we've got to see, plus the OPEC deal, we've got to see some kind of, you know, re-rating almost the next couple of years in oil, because, you know, you can't just switch back on these huge projects of exploration in the next 2-3 years. It takes 5-6 years for these things to come back on. So I think, you know, the outlook for oil particularly is looking quite good at the moment, you know?
Very much so. That's very much our scenario as well.
Yeah, exactly. David, thank you for coming on. Speak again soon.
Not at all. Justin, very good to speak to you, and a very happy new year to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Economist at Panmure Gordon. It's Simon French. Happy new year to you, Simon.
And a very happy new year to you too, Justin.
Yeah, I was saying yesterday, I don't know how long we can say this for, I suppose if you've not met anyone by May and you first time you meet them, into it's probably okay to say Happy New Year, I suppose.
I hope you put an automated message on your email saying Happy New Year as the first line, and then you can get on to typing the actual thing.
Exactly, yes. I know it is annoying having to retype all that nonsense out, isn't it? I hope you had a nice Christmas and Happy New Year and all that stuff, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so what are the hot topics on the macro scene, Simon?
Yeah, so I thought we'd kick off with a quick recount of what happened last night with the tweet from the president-elect. Following his Twitter account seems to be a key aspect of following financial markets at the moment.
Yeah, and he went first and foremost, what do you think of, I just think, isn't someone there, can't they just say, Donald, stop with the social media, you know. I just do think now it's not the right way to do it, you know. It's okay when you're running for president, maybe, but now you're starting to become president, just back off Twitter. Do you think?
I know, Justin, but here's the same guy who's not listening to his national intelligence briefings. So what likelihood some social media advisor coming in and him going, oh, you know what? That's absolutely what I need to do. I pity anybody who has that role trying to control that Twitter account. I think the tweeter in chief will be with us for at least 4 years.
Yeah. Surely there's someone there at the top tech end there. You know, in the American administration, can put some kind of block on it or something, or change the words in some way. Surely they can hack Donald Trump's thing
been watching too much House of Cards, Justin.
Yeah, for the good of the world, surely someone should hack him, you know, for in a nice way, you know. Anyway, so he's been having a go at Toyota, hasn't he?
He has. So shares in Toyota were down 3% overnight. They recovered slightly following a few words from the Toyota chief executive trying to smooth things out. But effectively, Donald Trump was saying that the new Corolla model that's being built in Mexico, although interestingly there's also a Corolla built in the US, if they want to import Toyotas into the US market, then they're going to have to pay a tariff, and a fairly big one at that. Now, of course, this runs headlong into NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which was a very popular campaign bashing target for Donald Trump, and he's clearly at the moment not rolling back from position that if you make stuff in Mexico or if you make stuff outside the US, you may well be expected to pay a significant tariff if you want to import it into that market. So a lot of uncertainty around what this means clearly for Toyota, but much broader, and China looms large, doesn't it? Because of course they're the big one with a trade surplus with the US, and that seems to be the kind of appointees he's put into his cabinet appear to be very much hawkish on China and their role in the US trade balance.
Yeah, and this is the third time now, because he mentioned GM, didn't he? And it's Ford, and I'm just wondering, Twitter, the bosses of Twitter must be loving this, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, there's the amount of traffic that's going through there trying to follow it. In fact, I think one of my analysts alerted me this morning to the fact there's now an alert app that can tell you if the real Donald Trump has tweeted something that is market moving. So already there are tech iterations of the fact that, you know, we're just consuming our media in a really different way. And for the first time, a president's announcing, well, if not policy, certainly intentions through that medium.
Yeah, and if they can't monetize this profitably, they've failed. Let's be honest, they're doomed to fail, because you've got the president-elect there actually using Twitter as his his platform, and if they can't turn that into a profit, I don't know what they can. Okay, so what's next then, Simon?
Well, so let's stay with the US, and we've got non-farm payrolls out later today, 1:30 UK time, and we're expecting payroll increases of about 180,000, but actually I think for the purposes of trying to understand what the Federal Reserve will do in 2017, much more interesting to start looking at the average earnings data, which has been hovering around 2.5%. I do feel that a lot of the FOMC, the policymakers there in the US, are going to want to see that pushing up towards 3.5% before they feel very confident to raise interest rates again strongly in 2017. Let's not forget, they're expecting to raise rates 3 times. I don't think they'll push out 3 rate rises this year. I think it's much more likely we'll get 1 rate rise, a maximum of 2. But clearly that earnings number at 1/2 will be key.
Yeah, okay. And I'm looking forward to this last story there, because we did just chat about it before we came on here. Apparently, you've been likened to Michael Fish, not yourself personally, of course.
The profession, The Economist.
Yeah.
So, of course, this stems from a speech made at the Institute for Government in the UK by Andy Haldane, who, if you don't know, is the Bank of England's chief economist. And to be fair, I mean, I've met Andy a couple of times, and he is employed by the Bank of England not only to be the chief economist, but also to think a bit outside the box, think the unthinkable. He's got himself slightly into hot water in recent times by suggesting that houses are better investments than pensions, and also by suggesting abolishing currency. But these are not policy prescriptions, these are ideas. Now, what he said that has attracted so much attention overnight is that the failure of the economist profession in the lead-up to the financial crisis was analogous to that famous sketch in, or not sketch, but weather forecast by Michael Fish.
Well, it is a sketch almost, isn't it?
You know? Well, I'm sure I'm probably a bit too young to remember, but I'm guessing Spitting Image did something, because it was such an iconic moment, wasn't it? When Michael Fish said, I think there'll be high winds in Spain, but for the woman who phoned in, I don't think there'll be a hurricane in the UK. Now, anybody who lived through that October night in 1987, certainly in the southeast of England, will remember that it was somewhat more blowy than it had been anticipated. Now, bringing this back to economics, he said, look, the forecasts were wrong. Nobody saw the financial crisis coming. I mean, I'd argue that Andy Haldane's just saying what the Queen said 6 years ago at a garden party when she was confronted by some economists and said, why didn't you see the financial crisis coming? But I mean, a lot of people have jumped on the bandwagon this morning and said, but they made the same mistake on Brexit. Now, Andy Haldane didn't exactly say that. And actually, as we've discussed a number of times, Justin, on the podcast, we won't know whether they were right or wrong on Brexit for a number of years. Depressingly, we won't know. But I think it just calls into question the fact that we obsessed, the media, the economist profession, obsess on macroeconomic forecasts, which is an incredibly difficult thing to do. There's so many human elements, millions and billions of interdependencies. Trying to get an accurate number, very, very hard thing to do.
Yeah, and also, what's the difference in the weather forecast, really, and you know, the economies there, is that companies who are taking on these loans or these high-risk, you know, sort of wrapped, really complex sort of financial instruments, they keep them quiet. They keep them quiet. They're not broadcast. Whereas a weather forecast, you know, pretty much, you know, and also, you can see that happening. You know, you should be able to look at the systems and see it happening. And also, what I find odd about that, when he said, oh, we've had a phone call into the BBC from a lady saying that we've, you know, there's a storm coming. What I like about that is that they're obviously very quiet department there, the Met Office. They've had one phone call and they decided to broadcast the fact they had a phone call. An old lady calling in saying, you know, so if he's kept quiet about the phone call, you know, they're very excited the phone rang, obviously, there, and they answered it. If they kept quiet about the phone call, it'd be fine. But I think in this day and age as well, with social media and all that stuff, that wouldn't happen in this day and age, because there's a lot more sort of communication going on, you know. But
it has dated the weather forecast, hasn't it? The fact that it was so sort of parochial to have a lady phone in. You would definitely get it through tweeting these days, but I think bringing it to the difference between weather forecasting, where you have you have huge number of interdependencies between ocean currents, winds, all sorts of things, and you have similar ones in financial markets. I guess the laws of science that govern our, you know, global weather patterns are slightly more predictable and slightly more repeatable than human behavior, which can often be irrational and persistently irrational for a long period of time. And I think therein lies the sort of, you know, if economic forecasts are going to have to get better, which I think they will, they're going to have to focus much more on trying to understand human behavior, which for years and years, and certainly in the decades leading up to the financial crisis, assume that you, Justin, and me, and everybody was rational, and that we took all the information available to us and made a sensible decision. I think we know from the experience of 2016 that that isn't always the case.
Exactly. You know, it's like investing. You've got that human behaviour, the emotion behind it is not rational. And for a certain extent, you go back to Donald Trump, you know, the way he's behaving isn't right, isn't correct, isn't textbooked, but it doesn't stop it. You think, well, listen, you know, he's bringing a lot of emotion into the way he's playing the game there. And you think, listen, you've got to pull back here and you'd be a bit more statesmanlike and not use your emotions. And using big tech saying, no way, you can't build that factory or do that. I will hit you with a big ball. You know, it's almost he is being the big man. He's playing by ego, isn't he? Rather than the way he should be playing it, like a professional statesman, you know?
Absolutely. And if you think economists have got it tough, political strategists, political scientists who've tried to work out what would be politically successful, you know, you look at the era of the Clintons, the Bushes, the Blairs, the Camerons, where it's all very stage managed, it's all very strategic, you've got PR consultants everywhere, it's all very managed. Suddenly, in the last 6 months, that model that would have been used to predict electoral success has just been chucked out the window. And I guess if humans are behaving like that in the electoral sphere, there's no reason necessarily why you can't get the same seemingly irrational behavior in financial markets and economies that mean a lot of the models that worked in the past just simply aren't fit for purpose now.
Yeah. Just one final thought. I would like to see the moment, because it's going to happen when a big advisor, you know, goes to Donald Trump when he's in office saying, Donald, we're shutting down your Twitter account. And I would love to see the conversation there. Donald will probably go through the roof. And he probably tweet about that. They're trying to make me shut this down. In fact, someone's grabbing my phone right now.
to be a fly on the wall.
I know. Lovely. Thanks very much. Speak next week.
Cheers, Justin. Bye-bye.
Okay, it's time for today's One for Your Watch List. Don't forget, anything here is not intended as investment advice. It's just information. Please do your own research. Action Hotels is the company suggested. AHCG, submitted by Value Hunter. What does the company do? Owns and operates 12 branded 3- and 4-star hotels in the Middle East and Australia. How many shares does the company have in issue? 147 million. What's the current price and market cap? Price, 52.5 pence. Market cap, 77.5 million. What revenue and profit loss does the company generate? 6 months ended the 30th of June. Revenue of $25.6 million. Up 18% year on year, a loss of $3.8 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? $5.6 million of cash as at the 30th of June 2016, and current liabilities showing borrowings at $27.8 million for the 30th of June 2016. List three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, double-digit revenue growth, cash generative, and pays a dividend, yields over 4% at current share price. Number two, currently trades at a 44% discount to last reported net asset value of 95 pence a share. And number three, owning family hold 66% of the shares, so their interests are very closely aligned with private investors. That's Action Hotels. Thank you very much for submitting that, Value Hunter. That's AHCG. Like I said, do your own research. But if you know of a company that you think should be on other people's watch lists, please go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click one of my posts there and you'll scroll down. You'll see a little question there saying, do you know of a stock that you think should be on other people's watch lists? Please click here to fill in the form and I could be featuring on a future podcast. So do that, please. And it'll, send that information, share that information with thousands of people. Targeted people. People who are in the game of investing. All right, here are the top five most followed companies on the Vox Market platform in the last 7 days. They are at five, Sirius Minerals. Are you serious? Yes. SXX ticker. I apologize for that. At four, Big Sofa Technology, BST. At three, Ascent Resources, AST. At two, Audio Boom. Boom ticker. It's a good ticker, that, isn't it? And number one, no surprise, really. It's EVR Holdings, EVRH in the world of virtual reality. Okay, here are the top five most liked RNSs this morning on the platform here. Gear for Music is at five, trading update. At four, I just had just spoken to Simon Clifton there from Satellite Solutions Worldwide, SAT, operational update and completion of acquisition. At three, MySquare, new investor relations video presentation. At two, Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO, Holdings and Company. And the number one most liked RNS today on the platform was Ascent Resources, AST, operational update. And that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, get involved. If you want to share a company that you're a big fan of, that you think other people should know about, then submit it for one for your watchlist. Thank you for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.